Well, today's the first Sunday of Epiphany, as we mentioned. And this bridge in the church calendar, it's interesting how it tends to get lost over the last century or so. Epiphany is not that big of a deal in our time and place. That's not true elsewhere around the world even today. One time when we were in Italy, they had their big Epiphany blowout while we were there, and it was big. I mean, they celebrate Epiphany like nothing else over in Italy. And historically, this holds up too. Epiphany is one of those church seasons that was present from very early on. By the 4th century, both Eastern and Western Church were celebrating the season of Epiphany, primarily with the texts that we still have today. Epiphany has been a bigger deal and was set earlier than even Christmas was. What is it about Epiphany that gets so much news? The themes of Epiphany are themes of God's glory, his bigness, his majesty, and specifically God's glory being discovered in the person of Jesus. Right? Anyone who tries to pretend like Jesus never laid claim to being God needs to walk through the season of Epiphany, because that's all that we get. And it's surrounded by images of light, themes of light. Right? Here today we get the baptism of Jesus at the riverside, and the heavens are cracked open, and God speaks loving words over Jesus. We see at the end, we'll see the transfiguration. Jesus up on a mountaintop starts glowing white. All right? We see images of light all throughout. And of course, the Magi's star that leads the nations right to Jesus' doorstep. But certainly, mission is one of those pieces of Epiphany that even for churches that celebrate it, tends to get set to the side oftentimes. This is the light of the world that has come into the world, Christmas, seems to have been snuffed out by the world, Lent. But here at the bridge, we get to see clearly who this light of the world is. And this light of the world is going out to all of the world, not just to God's people at that particular time and place. So, what this means for us is that it's a season of sharing the story. So we're going to spend the next 6 weeks in this sort of sermon series. We're still using the text that the church gives us, but particularly with the lens of what it means to share the story, the big story, the truest story in the world, the God who created it, saw it push away, rescued it, and is restoring it. This involves us. That would not be my plan, but that was Jesus' plan. Thankfully, I am not Jesus, and please remind me of that if I ever forget it. This season, Epiphany is about the revealing of who Jesus is. So over these 6 weeks, we will lean into that. And today, I want to set us up by saying that we will not share this story if we do not live the story. And we will not live this story if we do not first receive our own lives as story. That's what we get to lean into today as we see Jesus on the riverside. Storied lives and a storied faith. What do I mean by story? Storied lives, storied faith. Here's my kind of working definition of story in this sense. Story is the unfolding meaning that we make of our experiences in the world that orient us towards our future within the world. Story is the unfolding meaning that we make of our experiences in the world, orienting us towards the future within the world. And let me tell you, we are powerful storytellers. Stephen Miller is Donald Trump's White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy and Homeland Security Advisor. I imagine he needs a very large business card for that title. He gave a clear answer to the why of many of the last couple weeks' stories in an interview with Jake Tapper on CNN. He said, "We live in a world, in the real world, that is governed by strength, that is governed by force, that is governed by power." This is a powerful story, is it not? Is it wrong? Is it right? Either way, this story is powerful because it is shaping the decisions of a powerful nation. Stephen Miller is living by the story that he understands to make sense of the world that he has experienced. How do you make sense of a kind of gut-wrenching couple of weeks of news recently? Venezuelan president captured. Maybe, maybe not the seizing of Greenland. I know we're all getting nervous because I'm talking politics a little bit. Aha, yes, yes. Thank you for sharing that piece of your story, Leanne. Yes. Yeah. The way that we would answer questions like this, tell a powerful story. Maybe some of us would say, the why behind everything that's gone on is because the law has been systematically ignored, and we're finally trying to fix it for the sake of national security. Maybe others of us would say the why behind all of these stories is because we have the wrong people in office. There are all kinds of other narratives that we can use to tell the story behind what's happened. I'm not here to tell you which of those to believe. But notice the power of story and how we, on a gut level, interpret what's going on. America's answers indicate that we are powerful storytellers, as seen in, say, how we interpret the death of Renee Good. She was shot by the hands of an officer, and this is tragic and should be mourned on its own. But our storytelling proclivity has caused us to instantly interpret what happened before really understanding the details of the situation. Our stories are so powerful. The stories that we tell ourselves are so powerful that they are causing us to react before we think. This is the power of story. And we cannot help but tell and live by the stories that we've come to understand. Whether we are right or wrong, we are powerful storytellers. Okay, politics over. You can kind of take a breath here. Remember that story is the unfolding meaning that we make of our experiences in the world, orienting us towards the future within it. What is it that helps to shape your outlook, your tendencies, your choices, your decisions, that helps you to interpret the details of your life as it unfolds over time? Life is storied. We like to think of life as a series of bullet points that we live by, pieces of information that kind of flips a switch one way or another for us. But the way that we actually interact in the world is through the unfolding reality and relationship with the world as we know it, with those around us. Your life is its own story, made up of the stories that you live by. And the tragedy is that they are not always true or good for us. Which is why Jesus, as we see today in our gospel story, longs to enter in to our stories. And we must let him. We know the sting of powerfully living a false story. I'll never fit in. I'll never get out of my own way. I'll never be good enough. I'll never be able to climb the ladder. I'll never be able to support my family. I'll never be able to find love. I'm unlovable. We know how hard it is to live by a false story. Some stories are motivating, but that doesn't mean they're any less false. I've got to keep going or this thing is going to fall apart. If I get this job or this bank account number or get into this college, then I'll be safe. Or maybe the story, I've earned everything that I have. Maybe the story, if the Democrats win or if the Republicans win, I'll have to move to Canada. I heard that story a lot. Sorry, that was the last bit of politics. We can't help but live storied lives. But left to ourselves, the stories that we tell that are powerful will eventually crush us. This is why Jesus needs to enter into our stories. So how do we see that in today's passages? I know it sounds a little bit harsh to say that we oftentimes get our stories wrong. It's because actually we're amazing copers. We have amazing skills at taking whatever comes our way and coping with it, figuring out a way to survive just by what we have within us. Those are things that oftentimes therapists work to undo later in life because we've built up these robust coping skills that are actually not serving us anymore. Sounds a little bit harsh, but look at this. John the Baptist himself needs Jesus to enter his story and to correct some of the way that he's looking at things. If you were to look at our gospel passage again today, you would see John the Baptist. I mean, this guy is prophet par excellence. He is the last in the line of prophets. He is the one that points out Jesus in the crowd. He is the one that gets it all right, it seems. He does everything correctly. But then here, how he engages with Jesus. In those days, John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness of Judea and saying, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near." Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. But John tried to deter him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you. Do you come to me?" We'll get to Jesus' reply here in a moment. But notice, rock star, John the Baptizer. He's got this crowd coming out to him from Jerusalem. He's got a big following. He points out Jesus in the crowd, and then Jesus asks him to baptize him. And John says, "Wait, this isn't how it's supposed to go. There's something about the stories that he's living by that's not making sense of this moment." And that's right. This is one of those moments in the story of Jesus where if you could have edited out Jesus asking to be baptized, you would have done so. If this was merely writing a story for the sake of creating a religion, you would not include this story because it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that the Messiah would need to be baptized, which, in the way John is doing it, is simply cleansing from sins. Right, being forgiven of all the ways that we've gotten it wrong. But the Messiah, why would the Messiah need to be baptized? This isn't right. Jesus, you know what you're doing here. Anytime we find ourselves asking that question, let our ears perk up some. John was getting everything right. He actually did see everything right. But there was a bigger story that he needed to be able to fit his into, a bigger story that he needed to understand. And so Jesus says, "Let it be so now. It is proper. It fits. It's just the right puzzle piece. It's proper for us to do this to fulfill all righteousness, to make everything work together." Then John consented. Notice how tenuous of a moment that is. John is here with this following, and he's sifting through his understanding, through the story that he has grown up in. He knew Jesus already. They'd talked about stuff. He's sifting through in this moment, this very public moment, where he's called out, and he consents to what Jesus has to say. Jesus enters into his story, and it's uncomfortable. It's challenging, even as it's affirming of his ministry and his calling, what he's supposed to be doing. It is an uncomfortable reality when Jesus enters into John's story. It's no less true for us as well. I brought a gift for you to get to look at here. These are my socks that are dirty from yesterday's exercise. Now, I don't know about you, but right after an exercise, these things tend to be kind of like stuck to my feet. And I usually just grab them from the top and kind of peel them off. And so I'm actually surprised that one of these is still right side out. Usually they're inside out this way. They're nasty and gross. All right? I'll clean my hands before I shake yours. There is something about the work that Jesus does in entering into our stories where he doesn't just come surface level to turn our socks right side out. There are so many ways that we have coped and lived by stories that are not serving us anymore. And the work that Jesus does to get us out into the right space again so that we can flourish is reaching all the way down to the very end of the sock to pull it back out again. And to get us into the space where we can flourish and function in the way that we're supposed to, perhaps after we wash them. When Jesus enters into our story, he doesn't stay on the surface. He reaches all the way down into the deepest, grimiest spaces that we don't really want him to go to. But he brings flourishing out of them. This is what he's doing in John's story, and it's no less uncomfortable for God's people, Israel. Jesus shows up at the Jordan River, this place that is pregnant with their story. This is where God led them into the promised land through the waters. He knows what he's doing in entering into this story here. He's entering in to a story that God's people had let down. They treated each other poorly. They marginalized those who are already marginalized in society. They got it wrong in so many ways. But Jesus comes and enters here on the banks of the Jordan River, enters into their story, and pulls them right side out again. You're right, he does not have to be cleansed from sin. Jesus is sinless. But in being baptized on the Jordan River, he is actually taking on the story of God's people and all the ways that they've gotten it wrong and taking it to the cross. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to recognize when we're getting it wrong. It's uncomfortable to realize that we need a rescue. But Jesus comes there nonetheless. Dan Allender is he's a Christian counselor who does really amazing story work as part of his practice. He said, we resist telling a story that we don't like, and we don't like our own stories, at least especially certain parts of them. It's why we need Jesus to enter into our story. He does the same thing for all of humanity here on the banks of the Jordan River. This is why God came down as a human. He takes on the story of humanity, how we have pushed God away, how we can't help but hurt one another so often and be hurt by one another. and he restores our lives. He offers us a bigger narrative to find ourselves in. Jesus longs to enter into our stories, and we must let him. But letting him enter our story actually isn't the end. That's the beginning. Jesus entering our story means that we are still looking at the future as a story yet to be told. Jesus is rescuing and bringing flourishing to the world, and we get to be a part of that work with him, even as he brings that flourishing within each one of us. We get to do that work with him, which means actually that allowing Jesus into our stories is not just a moment. It's something that we have to walk out in the rest of life. Just like the stories that we tend to live by, what are the narratives that we allow to shape how we understand what's going on in the world? John the Baptist would find himself in prison, killed later. And yet this story is the one that he allows to shape the way he understands those realities. He even wrestles with Jesus. Are you really the one who's supposed to come? That's an inherent part of living this story with Jesus throughout our lives. We wrestle with it. We bring the places where we are uncomfortable with what it seems like Jesus is doing into our relationship with him. We follow our curiosities because actually that's the story of faith being lived out. We don't like telling the uncomfortable parts of our stories. Even when one of these things is inside out, I'm shocked at how much it still kind of sort of looks like a sock. If I really wanted to, I could wear this and it would do some of the function of what I need it to. This represents our coping, our capacity to ignore the areas that are actually not serving us anymore. We could go through life as an inside out exercise sock. But I'm sure that would cause a lot of problems. I thought about looking up what they would be. But it's not the flourishing that he longs for us. Allow Jesus to reach into every part of who you are, every part of your story, every one of the small stories that we live by, and allow his voice to speak truth and good over them. Because that will bring our greatest flourishing in this life. John was at a very important place on the banks of the river. As we remember Jesus being filled with the Holy Spirit, notice also that Jesus needed to hear the words from his Father, the words that would inform how his story would be lived out ahead of him, just like we need to hear them. What does the Father say to Jesus? This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. What if we could actually live by that story? Jesus hadn't done anything yet. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Life is storied. That's just true for how we go about living in the world. But faith is storied. We walk with Jesus day in and day out, letting him speak the words of truth over us to help us know how to understand life in this world. It is uncomfortable, but it is good. The question for us as we look at sharing the story is, can we believe the story? And in believing the story, Can we look for the ways that Jesus is helping us to live within the greatest story ever told that he's created a part for us in? Let me pray for us.